Struggling to move your nonprofit forward? You've come to the right place. Welcome to The Nonprofit Architect, where we are giving you the actionable steps you need to launch and grow your nonprofit organization. Now, here's your host, Travis Johnson.
Hey, thanks for tuning into the show. But before we get started, I wanted to give you all the opportunity to hop in our group at facebook.com/group/nonprofitarchitect. We're running a contest right now for your chance to win a $200 donation. We're not just building stronger nonprofits by giving you the actionable steps to do what you do better, but we're also putting our money where our mouth is. And if you sign up for the contest, and the rules are in the group, that you will get the chance to win a $200 donation and have a direct, real-world, real-time impact to your mission. If you're struggling with fundraising, if you're unsure of how to handle a board, if you're not sure where to go and what your next steps are because you have this endless list of things to do, you can also sign up for the Nonprofit Architect Alliance Mastermind Group. Real easy, real low barrier of entry at $50 a month to get in with other leaders like yourself that find themselves stuck. Help let other people in the group solve your problems. If you're doing this thing as a solo shop or without a lot of support from your board, it's hard to know who to go talk to. It's hard to know what to do next. And if you're doing this alone, chances are you're not going to get very far. If you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go as a group. So also in the group, sign up for the Nonprofit Architect Alliance Mastermind Group and let the experts help build your stronger nonprofit each and every month. Now let's go to the interview. Hey, welcome. I'm here today with Eric Johnson, founder of Thrive Solutions. We're going to talk about how to build a strategic plan that actually works. Eric, how are you today?
Travis, I'm doing really well. Really happy to be here on the podcast and excited to talk about vision and strategic plans and how to help organizations move forward.
Oh, absolutely. I love helping people do whatever they're doing and doing it better. How did you get started in the strategic vision and planning?
Yeah, so my background, I'm actually a pastor, and prior to that, I had worked in the private sector and had kind of picked up, you know, principles for leadership and vision and strategic planning over those years. And then when I entered into ministry, I took a call at a church that over the previous 20 years had had probably every bad thing that can happen in a church happen to it. So we had a pastor die in office. We had a pastor who actually was arrested for solicitation of a minor, he just got out of jail last year. This church went through a pretty significant church split after several years of toxic infighting and just the unfortunate things that can happen in a church. And they had been without a pastor full time. Permanent pastoral presence for about 5 years prior to my coming. I took the call in January of 2017 and very quickly saw that there was a unique culture to this place that was really positive, that had gotten bogged down by a lot of the garbage that had happened. There were things that these people did intuitively to live out that unique culture, that unique vision that they had. And so if we could figure out exactly what it was that they were doing intuitively, we could start to do those things with some intentionality and really become an organization that was good news for our community and really could make a difference in the area that we're in. And so started doing that work, and over the course of several months we worked through our vision, put together a strategic plan that would help us become the best version of ourselves. And it was at a Chamber of Commerce event that I hosted at the church and was just sharing our story and how it was a new day and what, the process that we had gone through to get to the place that we were at. And after the event was over, a gentleman came up to me and said, really unsolicited how impressed he was with the work that we had done. And he actually thought that other organizations, other churches, other nonprofits would hire me to help them do in their organization what I had done in mine. And when he said that, my response was no, they wouldn't. I'm a pastor. That's all I'm you know, looking to do. And just over the course of the next, you know, few months, every time I'd see him, he would still be pushing me in the direction of, hey, you should really explore this. I think what you do is really powerful, and there's organizations that would want to hire you. And so finally, after about 3 or 4 months of him, you know, hounding me about it, I gave in and started to think about what it would actually look like to duplicate what I had done in my organization. Because I knew that if this worked in a church that had had as many challenges as ours had had, that it could work just about anywhere else. And so started thinking it through and started talking to people about it, and they agreed. And in fact, I had a couple of organizations hire me right out of the gate to help them do what I had done in my church. And it just sort of rolled from there. And so now I've been doing this for, you know, coming up on a little over 2 years now, I guess, as a fully functioning consultancy. I never would have thought I'd be in doing this work, but it's a really nice, both supplement and also an outgrowth of the ministry that I do in my church. So it's been a surprising but fun ride.
Oh, I mean, it sounds like you walked into basically the most chaotic and unpleasant church scenario ever, with all of that litany of things that happened, and you took it in stride. You found a way to steer the ship and get it back on course. And the method you used was so profound that you get a little bit of encouragement. Well, it sounds like a lot of encouragement to start out on your own and really deliver this to other organizations in need. And that's actually what we're going to talk about today, which I think is really exciting. Like, how can you take what you have, reformulate it, figure out what really matters, and get your own ship back on course? And you love doing this, teaching other people how to do this very thing.
Yeah. I mean, I think what I was the recipient of some good work by my interim to help the people move past and find some healing. And I think that's a really important step that does happen in organizations. I think it can happen concurrently. At some point, enough leaders have to realize that the direction and what is happening within the organization, whether it's a church or a nonprofit, is unsustainable. And I think, you know, particularly, you know, we're recording this in the middle of COVID season. A lot of organizations are struggling because the thing that I've been saying to folks is that COVID did not cause any problems. COVID just revealed problems and that had been unaddressed for long periods of time. And not only did it reveal those problems, but it also accelerated the consequences of not dealing with them. And so I think at some point, leadership, whether it's, you know, a solo leader like a pastor, an executive director, a board, you know, there's got to be some recognition that the path that we are on is not sustainable, and to commit to doing the deeper work of digging in and figuring out exactly who we are as an organization. One of the things, you know, kind of my mantra that I live under is that you'll know what to do when you know who you are. And when there's confusion about next steps, when there's uncertainty and even conflict or division around next steps, it really takes a commitment to diving deep into the identity of the organization to unearth what is the right next step for this particular whatever organization that you're working with. Rather than trying to adopt a cookie cutter strategic plan or something that, you know, a vision that you saw somebody else pursuing that, you know, you wanted to make your own. Every organization has within it the capacity to be great and the capacity to make an impact. And that's, you know, it's going to be different. It's going to be unique to what is what is at play within that organization. But every organization has within itself the capacity to change lives. And so it's a matter of just getting the junk out of the way and revealing what's true and what's good, and then building out how to become the best version of yourself as an organization.
Well, it sounds like, and correct me if I'm wrong, it sounds a lot like what Jim Collins says in From Good to Great. And those of you listening in the audience and our like little pre-interview, Eric suggested to me that I read From Good to Great by Jim Collins, and I actually just finished it today, this morning on my morning watch, which is phenomenal. And he talks about many of these concepts and what it is to be a level 5 leader, a little bit beyond just being a level 4 leader, but being that servant leader and understanding what's really important at the core of the mission and getting the who, getting the people right before you get the what right. And once you've got that in the right order, then everything else seems to fall into place.
Yeah. And I really had my eyes open to that within my first month in this church. As I got to know the people, particularly as I met with I did one-on-ones with each of our key leaders. And I came into the call with a bunch of ideas of what I wanted to do. You know, like every leader, when they start a new position, they in their mind think, you know, oh, when I get there, I'm going to do X, Y, and Z, and it's going to be great. And that's how I walked in. And then, Mike Tyson said, everyone's got a plan until they get punched in the mouth. And now, fortunately, the punch in the mouth for me was positive. Like, I got to know these great people, and it helped me to, you know, change my, it wasn't a negative thing. But what really blew me away was that in talking with each of our key leaders individually, I heard a lot of common themes about what was meaningful to them, about their own faith journeys, their own life journeys, that there were common themes that ran through their stories. And that gave that insight and the ability to see that and to leverage those common themes to bring people together to say, these are the things that really run through all of our stories, and to rally people around that, around those common themes and doing the behaviors that come out of that with intentionality. I think it's very easy to focus on the what you think you should do to fix a particular situation or to fix a particular organization or a particular culture. But culture is not a thing. It's not a button to push. It's not a lever to pull. Your culture is your people. And so rather than going in and trying to change a culture or fix a culture, when you say that, what you're really saying is I'm trying to change people. And how easy is it to get people to change?
Super easy.
Right. You must know some pretty special people then. Because you're either getting people to change as in changing their behavior, which is very challenging, or changing people as in you're going to remove some people and put in new and, you know, quote unquote, better people, which, you know, maybe in a corporate setting, you can do that. In a church or a nonprofit, you really, that's pretty damaging to try. And so rather than trying to change the culture, what I set out to do, and now what I coach and what I do in my own consulting, is let's identify the best version of the culture that's already present. And let's bring out the best aspects of that we all can rally around. And that will help us to get to be the best version of us.
Oh, absolutely. I'm still active duty Navy. Those who have been listening for a long time, you know this. But, you know, within the culture of the Navy, you have a lot of personalities, and you have a very systematic way that you do annual training, and you learn how to do your job, and you get groomed for the next step. And these things are in place in an organization this size. When you're in a startup or you're in a nonprofit, you don't have these things in place. You're trying to figure this stuff out as you go. And really, this podcast is designed for idea through startup in about 5 years of operation, really trying to figure out who we are. That's really your first step. When you go into an organization, you help them develop this clear strategic plan, is you got to figure out who we are as an organization. How do you do that?
So yeah, there's some processes for doing that. A lot of it has to do with getting to know the individual journeys of the people that are apart. The social sciences tell us that people are drawn to join certain organizations, take certain jobs, live in certain communities on the basis of how their personal biography aligns with the history of that organization, that company, that community. And so that's really the first step is to really understand the biographies of the people that make up that organization. And that's where those common themes start to emerge. And then what we really try to do is to answer three different questions. The first question is really, who are we and who are we becoming as an organization? It's that, what is the best version of who we are and the value that we bring? And when we get that right in the process, the organization and the leaders will possess confidence in the value that their organization brings to those that they wish to serve. And then there's not a challenge with making the ask, whatever that ask is, of people, whether it's time, talent, treasure, because the leaders know that their ask will tie back to the best version of that organization. So for example, when you know what the best version of your organization is, it's very easy to ask for money, because you know that the money you're asking for has a very specific outcome tied to it. Whereas when you don't have that clarity, there's lingering doubt about the value you bring amongst your, not only your own people, but the community that you're trying to serve. There's less clarity about your mission, which then causes people to be less inclined to give of themselves. So we really want to answer that first question, who are we and who are we becoming as an organization, clarifying the best version of who we are and the value we have. That really sets us up then to answer a couple other questions. Secondly, what is the world we're trying to create? Every organization is trying to create a world, quote unquote, that what is the outcome of their organization? You know, as a church, our outcome is to see lives changed, marriages restored, and loneliness overcome. That's very specific to who we are as a church. Other churches have a different outcome. A lot of times in church strategic planning, you see this where they'll say things like, well, we're here to love God, love people, and serve. And that's great, but that doesn't tell me enough. There's not enough clarity in that if your church's mission statement, or if your nonprofit's mission statement can be used by any other organization in your community, it's functionally worthless. And so we've got to know what it is. What is the world that you're trying to create?
It sounded like when you said, love God, love people, it sounds like the input and what you're really trying to define is the outcome. What are you trying to create? And they just kind of define the wrong side of the system is what it sounds like to me. I'm in the Navy, and people join the Navy for many different reasons. Some of them is to serve. They really care about their country. Maybe they're looking for a career or a college to be paid for, or some are just looking to escape the situation that they're in. So I think finding the common thread through all the people of what they're really there for might look something a little bit different in a nonprofit. You might be there for a job because you don't currently have one and you think it might be easier or nicer to work in a nonprofit. Well, depending on which one you work in, that might not be true, what you're looking for. Maybe you really, really, really care about the mission, or you have a close connection to the founder. So just being part of an organization doesn't necessarily tell people why you are there. So I think it's important to understand really who you are and who you are becoming. I think that's a nail on the head right there, Eric.
Yeah. And, you know, there is that deeper understanding that, you know, sort of at the DNA of you and how your DNA and how the DNA of the organization align, is really critical to get clarity about, because that's really why you're there. Like, I came to this church, because I was looking for a job at a church. And yet there are ways in which my story aligns very deeply with the story of this place. The nonprofit that I also chair a board for a nonprofit here locally. And same deal. When we started doing the strategic planning vision stuff that I lead folks through, you know, again, I saw deep resonance with my own story and the story of this of this nonprofit. And so, yeah, it's having that clarity, and then getting having a shared understanding of the world you're trying to create, knowing what, you know, what the direction, what the end goal is. It's like when you go on vacation, you know, you kind of want to know what Florida is like before you decide you want to go there. And, you know, having that clear sense of where you're going allows you to know what to say yes to and also what to say no to. When you don't have that sense, that clear sense of the world you're trying to create, there's no practical direction towards your vision. And then you'll struggle to help your people know how they can achieve the best version of your culture. And so those first two questions of who are you and who are you becoming, what's the world you're trying to create, and then it really just sets it up to the third question: how do we get from where we are to where we need to be? So what are the assets that we have at our disposal? What assets do we need to cultivate? And then what are the milestones we need to hit in order to achieve that best version of us and to create that world that's within us to create.
I love it. I love all of it. You mentioned going on vacation in Florida, and immediately a story popped into my head because a vacation does not mean the same thing to everybody. Just the word vacation. Really, it's time away from work. But having time away from work is different than having a goal for the vacation. My wife and I got to go on a cruise with another couple, some friends of ours, and became apparent really quick that we were not aligned between the two couples with what our goal was for the vacation. My wife and I went to relax and kind of, you know, mellow out for a couple of days, and they went to unwind and unleash, read in small print, party, which is nothing wrong with either one of those sides, but we weren't in alignment. Had we both been there to relax, we would have had a more enjoyable experience. If we were both there to unwind and or party, we would have had a much better experience. But not being in alignment, even though they're good friends of ours, even though we were quote unquote on vacation, it didn't matter that we were on vacation if we weren't in alignment to get exactly what we needed from this. And it's the same in an organization. If you don't have your staff and your board and your volunteers on the same page or from the same sheet of music, you can't play the concerto or whatever it is, because if they're in different points or if they're going different directions or if they're not under the same vision, mission, and, you know, outlook, you're not going to get a harmonious organization that's moving forward towards that goal or that end state or the world that they're trying to create. You're not going to get there.
Yeah. And that's where a lot of culture problems, that's at the root of that. So when I go, you know, when I'm dealing with an organization, I have a client, I was actually brought in to help my township government get their act together, because there were just a lot of problems within the elected officials, and then also within the team. And it's a township, but there's about 35,000 people that live here, so it's a pretty good size organization. And you know, when we talk about organizational culture, it's really the combination of the vision and values of the leadership and the experiences and expectations of, if it's a team, if it's a congregation, if it's the stakeholders of the, you know, clients, board members, it's how are those aligning? How is the vision and values of the leadership aligning with the experiences and expectations of the other stakeholders? And when a culture is dysfunctional, that's the first place to look. Is how are these two fitting together well, or in the case of a dysfunctional culture, they're not fitting together well. And so the work of clarifying what's the best version of us as an organization, what's the world we're trying to create, that helps to see what parts of how the leadership is viewing the mission, vision, and mission, and what parts of how the stakeholders are viewing the vision and mission. Where are the common themes at in that? And let's build bridges using those common themes. Let's find those, let's take those pieces and build our strategic plan on the basis of that, rather than trying to see these two sides or three, you know, however many, you know, directions the organization is being pulled. And instead of picking winners and losers, which is oftentimes what happens, let's find the common ground together, because that's probably where the best version of us is to be found. And so we get really clear about what, you know, what is the leadership looking to bring, and we get real clear about what is the team expecting, and they have experiences that predate the leadership. Essentially, I walked into a church that had a 58-year history, and so I have to take that into account. And I walked into chairing a board that had a 13-year history. I had to take that into account in how I'm helping to lead and shape that board. So there are experiences and expectations that are actually helpful to bring clarity and finding those places where we can connect and build upon, as opposed to me coming in as the singular leader or a key leader and saying, no, it needs to look like this. It needs to be done this way. It just doesn't work. I mean, you've got to be a really, really charismatic, driven leader, and you've got to be willing to lay waste to part of your organization, because there are just people who are just not going to go with you. And I'm not that charismatic, and you know, not wanting to try to leverage that kind of leadership. But for me, it just feels more natural to let's bring in all the experiences and expectations. Let's see how they align with the vision and values that I've come to bring. Let's find those common places and let's build bridges on the basis of that, and then build our plan in that direction.
Absolutely. When you have a well-established organization or have what you call a culture, that's something that's been cultivated and created over time, and it has a lot to do with the people that are there, big personalities, leadership, expectations, all of those things. Well, what would you tell a startup nonprofit or startup foundation that hasn't really decided who they're going to be yet? And what does this look like if built from scratch? And if you listened last week to Demi Korge, we talked about policies and procedures and definitions for what each position of anyone in your organization might hold. Like, what would you tell a new organization trying to figure this out for the first time?
Yeah, I think it still starts with clarity about who you are as a leader. So if I were to start an organization and I wasn't already self-aware about who I was, I would want to get clarity about the best version of me and what assets I have at my disposal and what assets I need to cultivate. And then I would start telling that story. Here's the best version of me and the best version that I think an organization that I'm going to lead would look like. And here's what I'm looking for. The nonprofit board that I chair, even though it was an established organization, it had been struggling for quite a long time. And good people that were a part of it, you know, the board that was there at the time, really committed, but, you know, in terms of capacity for stabilizing the organization and then growing it to where it needed to go, that was just not where they were at. And so it was almost a reboot that we were going through. Even though we had some established services and partners and such, we really had to tell our collective story and build a new leadership team. We've turned over our staff entirely in the last 3 years. We've almost entirely turned over our board in the last 3 years. And so, but it began with the people who were already a part, even though it was a small group, a small cohort of leaders. You know, what brings us together? What brings us together as stakeholders? What are those common themes? And so, if you're a singular leader launching something new, paying attention to who is already being attracted to that thing you're talking about, there's going to be common themes between their story and your story that are just going to be present. That's what's drawing them to you. That's what's drawing them to the mission. And so as you get that self-awareness about the best version of you, helping them to gain that awareness about themselves, and then let's laying those on top of each other and seeing where those common themes are at. And then building an understanding of your vision from there would be, so the process is the same. It's just a little bit, it's different dynamics because you're starting versus taking something established.
It's definitely hard to see the whole picture when you're a solo shop or you're the person with the vision moving forward and you haven't yet built a team, or if you have built a team, you haven't really delivered services or programs and you're not really sure what that looks like. What I found is very helpful is to solicit feedback. In the podcasting world, it's something like, hey, like, rate, review, and comment on these posts, and everything is fantastic and wonderful what happened. And yes, that was kind of a plug for me. But in the nonprofit world or the leadership world, you know, what are you good at as a leader? Do you communicate well? Do you use Jim Mattis's "what do I know, who needs to know, have I told them" communication method? Are you good at setting expectations? Are you good at creating checklists? Where are your strengths? And then ask people, hey, what am I really good at? And what do I not maybe do so well at? Like, I know for me personally that I seem to do really well at these conversations, and all the feedback that I've gotten, you know, aligns with that. What I'm not good at is A, basketball. I'm just terrible at basketball. But B, there's a lot of digital services that need to happen and digital things that need to happen in order to make this run right. And I know that I'm not the guy. I'm not the guy to do that stuff. I have a team that does that stuff because that's not something I'm good at. So finding and deciding what the things you are going to focus on, and then building a team that's going to help you do the things that you're maybe not good at or maybe don't like doing. There's nothing wrong with that. And you need that kind of feedback, and you need to build that team around you that you're going to have people that are going to be strong where you're weak and you're strong where they're weak. And together, you might just make one heck of a good organization.
Yeah. And a framework that I found really helpful for that work of knowing what assets I have at my disposal, or we have, you know, as collectively as a organization, and what's lacking is a framework called Five Capitals. I didn't come up with this. It's something that's been out there. But the five capitals that everybody possesses are financial capital, dollars and cents, intellectual capital, which is creativity and knowledge, physical capital, which is time, energy, and health, relational capital, family and friends, and then spiritual capital, which, you know, you can take that spiritually in terms of your faith, or you can, you know, if that's not, you know, your way of viewing the world, you can think of spiritual capital as just that connection to the thing that is bigger than you. So if it's your, the cause, and it's the sense of wisdom and power that you have, in relation to that cause. And so one of the exercises that I lead, boards through is inviting each board member, to think about their own capital. And to assess the, you know, what do they have in abundance? What capitals do they have in abundance? What capitals do they have in lack? We take a look at that as a board. And one of the things we often see, and it's sort of done with me already kind of knowing the result, because it almost always plays out this way, is that within most boards, there's people who have abundance in some areas, but lack in others, but that's made up for by the other people on the board having abundance in those areas. And there's a matchup that happens. So what we find in a lot of cases is that most organizations have what they need within them to thrive, to make that impact. It's just a matter of doing intentionally what they have been partially doing intuitively. And so it's this real aha moment where, you know, when it's an established organization, it's already present. Now, when it's not an established organization, you know, it's also really helpful to say, okay, I know that I have a strong, you know, if you're a startup, a founder, you probably have a lot of connection to the thing that's bigger than you, right? Your spiritual capital is in abundance. You know, you maybe have one, you know, one of the other capitals in abundance, either, you know, you've got a lot of energy and time. Like if you're launching out into it, maybe your physical capital is high, but your financial capital is really low, right? That's the problem that a lot of nonprofits, you know, founders, startups, church startups, they have is they've got the passion and they've got the knowledge, but they don't have the money. Well, what you start to do through that framework is think through how can I take what I have in abundance and bring it to bear on what I have in lack. And so you map out your relationships and you say, well, gosh, you know, I really need a lawyer on my board. I really need a CPA on my board. I really need, you know, these different, you know, somebody who does marketing. And then you start looking for it. If you know that your organization is lacking in intellectual capital, then you leverage your relationships to find those people. We found the board that I chair, through my interaction with our local chamber, I befriended a guy who's both a CPA and a lawyer. So one guy checks two boxes, right? That was me leveraging my relational capital to bring, some intellectual capital into the organization. So it's those activities of understanding, these are the five things that we absolutely have to have in our organization. We have to have spiritual capital. We have to have relational capital. We have to have physical capital, intellectual capital, and financial capital. And it's seeing what we have in lack and bringing those to bear, bringing what we have in abundance to bear on what we have in lack. And that's a part of what the strategic plan calls for.
You know, I've never quite thought of it all in that aspect. I mean, I've talked about time, talent, and treasure. And if you're a board member, you better have at least two of those, right? If you only have one, maybe you're a volunteer. But it's interesting the way that you break that down. I know the five capitals isn't a you thing, but I'm probably going to have a PDF that talks about the five capitals attached to this so people can see what we're talking about maybe a little bit more in depth. But it's interesting that you say that. But like, I know without a doubt, I talked about some of my strengths and weaknesses. You know, I'm not going to be the guy that comes on your team to be the digital creation guy because that's not where my talent lies. That's not my zone of genius. That's not one of the five pillars that I'm in abundance in. It's the lack. So maybe what this looks like in your organization is you might shuffle people around. I'm not talking about firing people. I'm not talking about promoting people, but maybe you have someone, maybe you don't even know it. You have someone that has abundance in one of these areas that is, they're just in the wrong billet. They're in the wrong job. And if they were over here with these people on this team, you might find that without a doubt, that was the best move you've ever made, moving Johnny from finance over to program development, because that's where he lives and thrives. You know, so much of my time in the Navy, you're billeted for a job, you show up and they say, I know what the orders said, but we need you over here. And that doesn't take into account any of my personality, any of the things that I've done over my lifetime experience, the zone of genius where I'm really, really good at, or in your explanation, the capital. They just need a body on a spot. Now, imagine if they did the same thing as a large organization as the Navy is and really put you in spots that aligned with your abundance capital. I can't even imagine what kind of organization the Navy would turn into if people were billeted by their abilities and zone of genius and abundance capital, other than, hey, we just need a spot over here.
Yeah. And, you know, in nonprofits and in startup nonprofits, it's really, it's normal because you're just grabbing people that can fill slots, right? You know, there is a bit of a lack mentality in both the church world and the nonprofit world, that there's not enough people who are willing to do stuff. There's not enough people who are willing to serve. There's not enough money. There's this lack mentality. And, you know, part of the challenge is, or part of the reason for that challenge is that we don't have clarity about the best version of us. So if we knew what the best version of us was, if we planned to that best version and not to some other version that's not us, you know, just because I read a book or I go to a conference and I see how another organization does something, that doesn't mean I can drop that into my organization and just expect it to take off. Right.
You can't,
it's shocking. I know that it's shocking, but something that works in Southern California might not work in Metro Detroit. And, you know, taking it to the church world, Rick Warren is an amazing pastor. I'm not Rick Warren, but he's not Eric Johnson. And so there's, we each have these unique things. And so, yes, do we look at best practices of other organizations? Absolutely. I can learn a ton from other organizations, other nonprofits, other churches. But at the end of the day, I can only do what's in the best version of me and my organization. And when I feel like there isn't enough, that's a check for maybe what I'm trying to do isn't within me to do. Maybe the reason I'm not finding that person or that resource is because I'm trying to do something that's not within the best version of me to do. And it's okay to say, you know what, we're just not going to do that because that's not who we are. That's not what we can be about. Let's be really good at the things that are already intuitively within us to be and become, and let's let somebody else be the best version of themselves. My church is never going to be anything other than the best version of us. So let's just do that. And let's not be, let's not compare. Let's not judge ourselves on the standard. Let's not judge what's happening within us internally on the standards of what we're seeing going on externally with somebody else, because we don't know what's their problems. We don't know what their challenges are. Let's get very clear about who we are. Let's get very clear about the world we're trying to create, and let's get very honest about where we are and map, build a plan that maps to where we want to go. That's, you know, there's always going to be enough resources for that.
I could download the PDF of Eric and I could study everything about him and I could emulate and copy everything he does. But no matter what I do, I can only be the second best Eric. On the other side of the coin, I can download the PDF of me, sell it, give it away to whoever wants it, and the best they could do is be the number two Travis. You have to know who you are, what you're capable of, and what you're doing. Just because you're asking for help doesn't make you helpless. And just because you're asking questions doesn't make you stupid. Do you think the president of the United States knows everything? And this isn't a political discussion. Of course they don't. They have advisors and they have people that they experts they bring in and they ask tons and tons and tons of questions to try to build the picture they need to make the decision that they're trying to make. It's the same with an organization. It's the same with a captain leading the ship. It's the same with everyone out there trying to do something, is they have to ask tons of questions to fill in the gaps of the things they don't know, because it's okay not to know everything. And you as a nonprofit need to be okay asking for help, because obviously you're trying to solve something that's bigger than yourself and you can't personally finance all of it. Just because you're asking for support or help or volunteers or money has nothing to do with the fact that you are who you are. So don't take those things out of context and think they mean something that they're not intended to mean. You can ask for help. You can ask questions, and certainly you can figure out who you are and try to be the best version of yourself, because the best I can be is me. And the world needs me.
Yeah. And the other thing that I see too, and, you know, I was talking with a nonprofit leader last week and this person was carrying a lot of shame for not knowing how to fix their problem. You know, there is sort of this, I should know this already. I should, you know, like I have a master's degree in whatever, and I should have, you know, the world for, you know, I graduated from seminary in 2016. The world is, I was prepared for a world that no longer exists. And in fact, the world that I was prepared for hasn't really existed in the church world for probably about 30 years, but that's a whole nother conversation. But a lot of our educational processes are great and have great foundations, but the world in the last 10 years, the world has changed. And even in the last year, the world has changed radically. And so there's no shame in not knowing what to do. The place to start is, who are you? Who are you in your best version? What is it? What is within it for you to be and become? What is it? What is within your organization to be and become? And that will then begin to give some insight to where you need to go when you'll know what to do when you know who you are. Now, that doesn't mean you'll know how to do it. You can know what to do when you know who you are, but it doesn't mean you know how to do it. And so, yes, bringing in a consultant, finding a coach, taking a online course, reading a book, going to a conference, those are all really great things to do. And don't hear what I'm not saying. Like, those are all, you know, great, but they can't tell you who you are.
Absolutely. I can buy a car and drive to Florida for vacation, whatever kind of vacation that is, but I'm not going to get there unless I have the map that tells me where I'm going, or having the GPS, depending on how old you are, to tell you where that you're going. If you don't know where you're going, any road will take you there, because it doesn't matter where you're going. I think that's a riff off of a Cheshire Cat quote in Alice in Wonderland. Well, where are you going? Well, I don't know. Then it doesn't matter which way I point to you, because you don't know where you're going anyway. It doesn't matter. What else would you tell a startup that's just struggling to get traction?
I think there's a temptation to throw stuff at the wall and see what sticks and then run with it, because you're just trying to get attention. You're just trying to get resources. I would want to get some real clarity about what you actually need and what do you actually fear? You know, a lot of times when I see nonprofits that are struggling to get traction, they are trying 7 different things and none of them are working. And sometimes it's because that thing they try, it doesn't align with who they are. Sometimes it's simply that they didn't give it enough time. And so I kind of want to know, like, how did you get to this point? You know, what is it that you're actually like, do you know what you're trying to do? Do you know what you actually need? And what are you afraid of happening if you don't make this happen? When an organization is struggling to get traction, it often, I think, again, it comes back to, are we doing the things that are in the best version of us to do? Because if they're in the best version of us to do, we're not going to struggle that much as mightily. So I think it comes back to an identity thing and what are the answers to those questions? Who are we and who are we becoming? What's the world we're trying to create? Where are we and how are we getting to where we go? Those are just foundational questions, Travis, that I don't think enough organizations spend enough time trying to answer. I think they see a need and want to fill it, which is great. And like, you know, but if we're not taking a step back and answering those questions, it is a recipe for striving and burnout and disappointment and failure. If we don't take the time to plan effectively for meeting the need that we feel passionate about meeting, if we just dive in and just try to start doing stuff, you're just going to spin your wheels and then you're going to feel like a failure, and nobody wants that. And it's not necessary.
I talk to tons of people wanting to make an impact, doing good things. And they call me and they say, I want to start a nonprofit. I said, maybe. And they're like, how do you know what I want? I was like, well, I know for sure you wouldn't waste my time calling me for the nonprofit stuff and talking about the weather, right? I know you have a mission and a vision and a drive towards helping somebody, something, some problem, some whatever it is. And you currently believe that starting a nonprofit is the best way to go. I talked to a gal in the DC area and she wanted to create housing for, I don't think I can remember the specific group of people, but let's just say ladies that are veterans, and she wanted to create housing for them. I said, fantastic. Do the ladies that are veterans want and or need the housing you want to provide? And she's like, what do you mean? I was like, you want to do a thing. You want to create housing, which is fantastic. Do the people you're trying to help actually need or want that thing? Do they actually need or want housing? And she's like, well, actually, I don't really know. I was like, well, who have you talked to that is in this area that you care about? And have they told you what they needed? Have you talked to the other nonprofits in that area? And is that something for female veterans that is not being provided that they know needs to happen? She's like, I haven't done any of those things. I was like, great. Now we have a place for you to start that may or may not include you starting a nonprofit and building homes that aren't needed or potentially not needed. And she's like, huh, I'm glad that we did this call because now I have some clarity about what I want. She knew that now knew for sure that she wanted to help. She had a group of people she wanted to help, but what she didn't know was the best way to help these people. So then she went on to call different organizations and canvass her area and find if that need was being met or if it was a need that they really had. She just knew in her heart she wanted to provide something, and she thought it was housing, and she thought she wanted to start a nonprofit. Maybe that's true, and maybe that's what she's going to find out. Maybe she's going to call me in a year, like, you know what, Travis? I did the things you told me to do. I went out and canvassed and talked to the other nonprofits in the area, and I found out I was right. It's exactly what they needed, and now I've partnered with this other organization that already exists, and I'm running a program from them, and we're going to start doing this based on the money that they've already rose. And now she's much, much, much closer to being able to provide what she thought she needed, and actually turned out that they did need, but she had to do a lot less work to get there.
Yeah. I had a friend who used to say, not every good idea is a God idea. And you know, whether you believe in God or not, the point is that I have all kinds of great ideas. I'll tell you they're great ideas because they sound great to me. Right. But are they the ideas that are really going to take my passion and match my passion with the need of the world around me? And so I might go through 10 good ideas, you know, until I find the one that's actually the God idea, or the idea that really moves forward. And, you know, I think probably what this person would have found, if there was not the need, or there was not, you know, had she not talked to you, she would have spent the next year spinning her wheels trying to raise money and identify. I just firmly believe that there is always enough in the system to meet the needs that are actually there. And it's a matter of mismatch. So there are abundance of resources in one place, and an abundance of talent and passion and wisdom in another place. And if we can just pull them together, there's always enough. And so when it seems like there's not enough, it's either that the match just hasn't been found yet, or it's not, the need isn't real. You know, do I believe that there are female veterans who need housing? Yes. I'm sure that that's true, you know, but is she the person to do that? You know, is that really what's in the best version of her to be? And I would really want to know and I'm sure you asked her this, but why is this a thing for you? Ultimately, what's going to drive me as a pastor, or what's going to drive me as a nonprofit leader, is my white, you know, the whole Simon Sinek start with why thing. Like, what's my white hot why for how I got into this? And the only way for me to sustain, you know, we can build strategic plans and that work and all of that, but the only thing that's going to sustain me in working those out is the why I got into this in the first place. And so helping people, leaders, to get in touch with that is a big part of the vision and strategic planning process too. Because just because you have a plan and just because it's well built does not guarantee that you're going to have, you know, you're going to, there's a whole, you still got to work it out. You know, you still got to execute. And it definitely puts you on the better position on the dance floor when you have that. But you're gonna hit fail. You're gonna hit roadblocks, and there's gonna be failure. And how do you push through that? It's that connection with the why.
This has been great, Eric. I love everything you had to say today, and how you work through the process of building that strategic plan that actually works. Thank you so much for being on the show today. Where can people connect with you?
Yeah, so you can find me, the place that I'm hanging out a lot right now is a Facebook group that I created about 2 months ago. It's called Thriving Leadership for Churches and Nonprofit Organizations. So it's a little bit of a mouthful, but it's if you go on Facebook and search Thriving Leadership Group, that's the at sign. I have a website, thrivesolutions.cc, that you can find me, or you can just send me a friend request on Facebook. So it's facebook.com/EJ Thrive. And I would love to connect with you. And if there's a way that I can help build a strategic plan that works for your organization, you know, either as a consultant coming in and doing it, or what I'm doing a lot of now is starting to train leaders to do what you would normally have to pay me about three times as much to come in and do. So many leaders that I come across have the skill set within them to lead a strategic planning process that works. It's just a matter of having the framework and the feedback to work that process out. And so I'm starting now to do training in that, and it's a much more affordable way for nonprofits and churches to build strategic plans that will actually work, as opposed to what is often out there that's more cookie cutter and doesn't necessarily get the job done.
That is fantastic. Thank you so much. And if you're listening to this and you want to drop me a line or ask to be a guest or have me speak somewhere or even to inquire about the Nonprofit Architect Alliance Mastermind Group, go to nonprofitarchitect.org and there's a little contact form in there. Fill it out, drop me a line, and I'll get back to you and we'll get it figured out, whatever it is. Hey, thanks again, Eric, for being on the show today. I hope everything goes well and looking forward to seeing what you're doing in the future.
Thank you, Travis. My pleasure.
You've been listening to The Nonprofit Architect. To listen to all our past shows, visit http://nonprofitarchitect.org. And be sure to subscribe, rate, and review our show. Thank you.